Man, what a night of unbelievable sports action. I hope you were able to watch a little bit of it. If not, we're going to get you caught up on it. And we will get you revved up for what we hope will be another night of fantastic NHL, NBA, Tigers, you name it. We had it last night. It was full of drama and scintillating action all night long. Great stuff, man. This is why I tweeted this out on X last night. This is why you love sports, you know, to take the Seinfeld episode, you gotta love sports. Simply incredible what took place last night. The clicker had to get a workout from you, I would guess. It sure did for me. I don't know how many of you really love the NBA, but playoff basketball is pretty awesome. I don't know how many of you embrace the NHL, but there's nothing like playoff hockey. And it's hard to measure a regular season baseball game against playoff action in two other sports. On top of all that, you've got the NFL draft coming up here in Detroit. But man, it was such great sports viewing last night. And I hope you had an opportunity to see at least some of it. Because we saw some things that we just haven't seen in I don't know how long. Tigers win 7-1 over Tampa in game one of that series. Mark Canha, 3-for-5 with a homer and two runs driven in. Parker Meadows went yard. Kerry Carpenter had another RBI. Seven straight games in which he's driven in a run. Javier Baez went 2-for-4. Tarek Skubal had 6 innings of 3-hit ball with 9 punch-outs. Now that is a complete win for Detroit. I don't know how good Tampa is. I don't think anybody does just yet. That's the whole exercise, if you will, in baseball right now. I mean, we know Tampa's at the bottom of the AL East. Does it matter at 24 games in? Probably not. They're 12-12. Okay. So what? You don't take anything away from a team that gets a win. I'm not putting some type of asterisk by it. They still have Yandy Diaz, who's a good player. Randy Arozarena, who's a really good player, even though he's off to a horrible start. I mean, just horrible start. Harold Ramirez is a guy who's driven in plenty of runs. Isak Paredes, you're well aware of. Jose Siri's got good speed in center field. They've got some decent players, all right? Two ex-Tigers, because Nico Goodrum is part of that team now. They don't have necessarily the same pitching, same bullpen. But listen, I mean, Kevin Cash is one of the best managers in baseball, period. I don't care where you're beating that team, you're earning it. So good for the Tigers, who've won a couple of games in a row. And ironically enough, I mean, they are 13-10 now, right? 13-10. They are 9-3 on the road. Not a big home and away guy in baseball. Sure, you get your last at-bats. Detroit's got a really good bullpen, I think. I think their pitching in general is pretty good, although the guy who throws tonight has not been Kenta Maeda. But good win for Detroit to start that series, right? Absolutely. My focus was more last night, nothing against the Tigers, but my focus was more on the postseason in the NHL and the NBA. It's been really good stuff so far. So I was flipping back and forth. But I was really enamored with certain games, like Toronto edging Boston 3-2. Auston Matthews had a goal and 2 assists. First time the Leafs have beaten the Bruins this year. The play by Auston Matthews, and he got the game winner. The play by Auston Matthews is just phenomenal. If you haven't had a chance to see it, try to find it somewhere. NHL Network, NHL.com, ESPN, CBS Sports, Fox, I don't care. You will love it. It's a flip up ahead from the Toronto blue line that instead of letting the puck bounce, instead of trying to knock it down with your stick, Austin Matthews catches it over the shoulder like a center fielder would with his left hand, drops it at his feet, dangles in on net, and scores. Beautiful. Just beautiful. Carolina staged. So I'm watching that. Then I flip over, and I'm watching the end of Carolina and the Islanders. And I'm not afraid to say, I kind of gave up on it earlier because while I was flipping back and forth, the Islanders were up 3-0 in the third. Carolina scores 5 times. First time New York has ever blown a 3-goal lead in a playoff game in 82 tries. The game-tying and game-winning goal came 9 seconds apart. That arena was shaking. It was an incredible game. Well, for Carolina. You wonder how a team, and they have a 2-0 series lead now, you wonder how a team can bounce back from something like that. How do the Islanders regroup after something like that? What is a coach? What is a captain? What do you say? You got to find the words. You got to find the inspiration. That cannot be easy after doing that. Edmonton beat the LA Kings 7-4. Zach Hyman, the former Michigan Wolverine, had a hat trick and 4 points. But the story really was Connor McDavid. The MVP candidate had 5 assists. 5. He was special. First time since 1998 that has happened. 4th Oiler to ever do it. And the 13th ever NHL player to do it in a playoff game. The last guy to have 5 assists in a game for an NHL team in a postseason match was Jeff Cortnell in 1998. He did it with St. Louis. Vegas trimmed Dallas 4-3. You want to know the story there? Mark Stone. You're probably going, Mark Stone, I mean, the captain of Vegas? So what? I don't get it. Well, it was his first game back after missing the final 26 regular season games with a lacerated spleen. Happened on February 20th. A lacerated spleen. Some would say in hockey that's an upper body injury. Amazing. The toughness and the grit of some of these dudes. Just floored by it. But it sure was a fun watch. Now we'll get to the NBA here coming up. You heard a lot of guys complain about the refereeing after these games, including the biggest name in the league. So we'll talk about that when we come back. What a fun night of sports. What a thrilling night of sports. And we get to talk about it here on X's and Bros throughout the great state of Michigan. We're here Monday through Friday from 6 until 9. Join us on the conversation 866-838-4843. Or you can text us, Sports Radio to 21000. X's and Bros across Michigan on the Michigan Sports Network.
Bill Simonson here for my good friend Josh Garvey. Now, he's a managing shareholder at Dorn Mayhew's Grand Rapids office. Their world headquarters are in Troy, Michigan, on the east side of the state, and they have locations all around the world. They have over 550 motivated accounting professionals, 90 years in business, and I mentioned the 10 offices worldwide. So if you want to connect and partner with one of the top CPA accounting and business firms in the world, they're right here in Michigan. Dorn Mayhew's Troy office on the east side of the state. And Josh Garvey is a managing shareholder for their Dorn Mayhew GR office Right there by the S-curve, you'll see the new Dorn Mayhew sign. You can find out more. Just Google Dorn Mayhew. That's DoreNMayhew or Dorn.com. They're one of America's and the world's top CPA accounting and business firms. They're Dorn Mayhew.
We're teeing off our 10th year. At the Meijer LPGA Classic for Simply Give. Get ready for the best tour yet to help neighbors in need while enjoying golf, food, and family fun. Join us June 13th through the 16th at Blythefield Country Club for fabulous food, Discoveryland for kids, and of course, elite women golfers from around the world competing to help feed our neighbors. Get your tickets now at MeijerLPGAClassic.com.
The Freddy the Pizza Man Foundation is dedicated to providing support to families and Michigan schools touched by autism. We invite you to join us in supporting these families and schools by making a donation at FreddyThePizzaMan.com. With your donation, you can help provide essential resources that can make a real impact. Visit FreddyThePizzaMan.com to make a donation and to learn more about the foundation's mission. That's FreddyThePizzaMan.com. Together, we can make a difference.
Timeout, we are tied. I love it. Don't call it. Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime. Murray makes a move. There's a the Nuggets have won. You talked about no timeout here. Jamal Murray with the step back over the 7-footer Anthony Davis calling game.
On TNT, Denver stunning the Lakers in a 101-99 final. Jamal Murray hitting the game-winning buzzer beater, the first in Nuggets playoff history. Here's the reason shooters believe you shoot your way out of a slump. He wasn't great. He was 8-for-23 before that shot. 8-for-23. That is not what Jamal Murray usually does. He's a really good player, man. I love watching that dude play. But when you're shooting, what would that be, Ben? About 35%, right? 8-for-23. About 35%. And yet he's got the stones and the guts and the gumption and the confidence to take that final shot. And I've said this a lot about athletes and who you want on your team. Sure, you want the guy who, whatever, this is the phrase, the guy who's not afraid to succeed. I want the guy who's not afraid to fail. I want the guy who's not afraid to say, you know what, I gave it my best shot, but I couldn't do it. I didn't get it done. It's a certain mindset. Murray had that. Meanwhile, Nikola Jokic had, listen to this line, 27 points. 20 rebounds, 10 assists. We briefly talked about it yesterday, man. How does that happen? I mean, how does this guy do this? He's got incredible vision. Big dude who looks like he's just a kind of a lummox up and down the floor. He's incredible. Really is. It's a hell of a win for Denver. They're up 2-0. I hesitate to say guarantee. Feel pretty confident thinking the Lakers are going to win next. Why? Did you see Anthony Davis and LeBron James after the game? Check it out. Anthony Davis, somebody said in so many words, I mean, how did something like that happen? Well, Jamal Murray made a shot, and then he just dropped the mic and left. Okay. Look, it's an emotional game. You're getting these guys within a 10-minute window. They're still upset. I don't blame them for being upset. I try to put myself in that situation. Never happened. But I try to put myself in that situation and think, would I want, after a failure, would I want to sit in front of an audience with a microphone answering certain questions? No, you wouldn't. So I get it. LeBron James was asked how challenging and difficult this is when you've basically had the game in hand. And he missed a three-pointer near the end that could have given the Lakers the win or the lead at the time when it was tied at 99. And he said, you know, what are we doing, man? Why are we doing this with all the fouls? It wasn't about Murray's game-winning shot. It was about the fouls or the non-calls. So he was complaining about that. And by the way, he didn't just focus on the Lakers-Nuggets game. He said, I just saw the end of the Sixers-Knicks game. He's like, you know, if we've got a replay opportunity and we've got people in New York supposedly taking care of this stuff, what are they doing? LeBron James, Anthony Davis questioned it a little bit. Here's a guess. It's an educated guess. We'll have to monitor this a little bit and see what's going on, okay? So bear with me. Ben, maybe we can mark this down, and then when game three is played in Los Angeles, let's see if the Lakers get to the line more than 13 times.
Okay.
Okay? They went 13 times against Denver last night. They're down 2-0. And I believe they play on Thursday. So Friday morning, if you can kind of give me a heads up on how, well, we're going to be talking about the NFL draft, and we're going to be at Ascend at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort when we do. But there'll be three games that night. Cleveland's going to play at Orlando, and the Knicks are going to play in Philly, and Denver's going to play in Los Angeles. So Friday morning, we're going to check it out. We're going to see how many times the Lakers go to the free throw line, see if it's more than 13 times that they went last night. And the same thing with Philadelphia, because what LeBron James was referencing in his post-game news conference was the shocking fact that Philly wasn't getting the benefit of a whistle late in that game. Now, the Sixers went to the stripe 22 times. I mean, that's not terrible. Right? They shot about 73%. They went to the line plenty. They just felt like there was a foul late in that game. I don't know if you happened to see that one. Again, I'm flying all over the place last night. Hockey, NBA, baseball, you name it. I was just watching everything. Knicks ended the game on an 8-0 run in a 30-second span to stun Philly by 3, 104-101. Fourth time since 1996 that a team trailing by 5 in the last 30 seconds came back to win it. The hero for New York is another example of why shooters continue to shoot. Because Jalen Brunson was struggling with his shot. 8 for 29 on the night, 1 for 6. But the one triple was massive. Absolutely huge. It tied the game. It bounced on the rim and dropped. And then, after a Philly either miss or turnover, I forget what it was, because Tyrese Maxey was phenomenal for the Sixers. I think he had 35 points. But it sure looked like Philly had this in the bag. New York gets a scramble, all right? Brunson drops in a corner three. It wasn't the best look. I mean, he had an open look, and then he kind of sidestepped his way to his right, lofted it. Then Philly gets the rebound. I think this is what it was. I think they got the rebound, or the inbound pass, I should say, and New York trapped him, and they turned it over. Dante DiVincenzo, Villanova, helped Villanova beat Michigan in the national championship, fires a three, misses it. Who wants it more? You've heard that saying, right? Who wants it more? Well, guess who wanted it the most? Isaiah Hartenstein for the Knicks. He wanted it most. He grabbed his eighth rebound of the night, found DiVincenzo again. He hits a straightaway three, game over, 104-101. Mad scramble at the end. Incredible. Maxey was great. He had 35 points and 10 boards. Joel Embiid was limping up and down the floor. He had 34 and 10. One enough. It's an incredible win by the New York Knicks. And the Cavs over the Magic, 96-86. Donovan Mitchell with 23 points. Jared Allen had 20 rebounds. Cleveland is up 2-0. Phone number on the Meyer phone line, 866-838-4843. That's 866-838-4843. You can also text us, Sports Radio, to 21000. When we come back, a little baseball discussion. A guy who's off to an unbelievable start, who many think could win not just MVP, but maybe comeback player of the year. And all kinds of controversy in New York, not out on the hardwood, but on the diamond involving Yankees manager Aaron Boone. We'll get to that when we come back on X's and Bros across the great state of Michigan right after this.
Huge here for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. You can stay up to date on the latest from Lansing 24/7 at MHSAA.com, at MHSAA on Twitter, and MHSAA on Facebook. The latest news, press releases, and stories connected to every high school in the state of Michigan available for you 24/7 from the Michigan High School Athletic Association. Log on to MHSAA.com, at MHSAA on Twitter, and MHSAA on Facebook. And if you're looking for archive, boys and girls, high school sports, MHSAA.tv. That's MHSAA.tv. 24/7, everything you need to know about high school sports in Michigan. Log on to MHSAA.com.
Hey, Michigan, let's go big. I'm Herman Moore, Lions All-Pro wide receiver, and I'm talking real big-time winning on the hottest slots and table games on one incredible app. Eagle Casino and Sports.
Sign up now and get up to $1,500. That's right. We'll match your deposit for up to $1,500, and you'll get 100 free spins.
Eagle Casino and Sports. Made in Michigan. Made for Michigan.
Must be 21 or older in Michigan to play.
We are live across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Sports Network, Monday through Friday, 6 until 9. We are on in Flint in WTRX Sports Extra, 1330 a.m. Glad we're there. Honored to be on in Cadillac WKAD, the Ticket 93.7 FM. Of course, in Grand Rapids on WMAX 96.1 FM, The Game. What a station that is. Grayling and Gaylord were on Up North Sports Radio, WGRY, 101.1 FM. Tri-City area of Midland, Saginaw, and Bay City, WLUN, 100.9 FM, The Mitt. We're on in Petoskey and Charlevoix, courtesy of The Ticket, Northern Michigan, WMBN, 104.7 FM and 1340 AM. And, of course, we're on in Traverse City. Where else would you rather be than WKAD, 93.7 FM, The Ticket? Ben is our producer. I'm Shep. You can text us, Sports Radio, to 21000. You can call us on the Meyer guest line, 866-838-4843. Tigers a winner last night, 7-1. Baltimore beat the Angels 4-2 in the game. Mike Trout 0-3, but two walks. He has changed some things, it sure seems like, and could be en route to what people would consider a comeback player of the year. Considering what he has done so far this season, and it's a very small sample size, but with the exit velo up, the exit angle up, the more disciplined approach, you can understand why people maybe feel that way. Low swing rate, low chase rate. Been really good so far. He's got, 8 home runs on the year among the league leaders there. Could he be in line for an MVP? Who knows? Long way to go with that. Just know this. There was a stretch from 2012, I would say through 2020. And remember, he's been, last year he was limited to 82 games. 2021, he was hurt. Only played like 36 games. But there was a stretch he won, when he was Rookie of the Year in 2012, he was second in the MVP vote as a rookie. Miguel Cabrera won it that year. That wasn't the debatable one, even though he led the league in runs and stolen bases and OPS plus, which is a big deal. I mean, it's a big number that many young GMs now look at. I think the big debate between Trout and Cabrera, as you know, has won a couple of MVPs too. That big debate, I believe, was 2013 when Trout hit 323, 109 RBIs, 110 walks, close to 200 hits. Whatever. He was MVP in 2014. He finished second in 2015. He was MVP in 2016. Top 5 at MVP in 17, second in 2018, won the MVP in 2019. It's unbelievable what he was able to do. Finished top 5 in 2020, MVP in 2019, as I mentioned. Of course, Silver Sluggers left and right. So 3 MVPs, 9 Silver Sluggers. 11-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, Major League Player of the Year as well, solid defensive player. He's at age 32, says he wants to win a championship in Los Angeles. Doubt it's going to happen. Arguably one of the greatest players in any sport not to win a title. But wanted to get you updated on that. Also wanted to update you on this. I don't know if you saw this in New York yesterday. You probably did. I mean, if you're on social media, I'll guarantee you did. But the Yankees were entertaining the Oakland A's. Oakland ends up winning it 2-0. But that wasn't the story. It was in the first inning when Aaron Boone was complaining to home plate umpire Hunter Wendelstedt, who's been around for a long, long time. I've had a chance to meet him and talk to him a little bit. Had a chance to meet and talk with Aaron Boone a lot. Like Aaron Boone a lot, quite honestly. I think he does a really good job. I think he's very personable, really good communicator. Anyway, bottom line is, Aaron Boone was ejected when he started to complain about a call or a non-call, and Hunter Wendelstedt warned him. Another word out of you, and you're gone. This is what I was talking about a couple of days ago. Maybe it was the end of last week. I was saying how... have you ever heard the term rabbit ears for umpires? In other words, you're hearing everything people say and taking offense to it many times. And Hunter Wendelstedt seems to have had that in this situation against the A's. You got NHL referees, they take so much gruff, it's unbelievable. Same thing with NFL refs and NBA refs. And NBA refs, you pretty much know where it's coming from because you're on the floor, you're close to the bench. You're a lot closer to the bench than you are Major League Baseball umpires to Major League Baseball benches. And a lot of times it can be difficult to hear from where it's coming if you're a Major League Baseball umpire. So Aaron Boone says, okay, yeah, yeah, all right. You don't want me to say another word? I got it, okay? To me, that's a little extreme. One more word out of you and you're gone. In other words, you've got eight more innings and you're telling me I can't say a damn thing, but whatever. So Boone doesn't say anything. Apparently, there was a fan right behind or above the Yankees dugout who then said something. Wendelstedt heard it and ejected Boone. Boone said, wait a minute. Like, he wasn't even looking his way. He was looking out on the field. Aaron Boone was not even looking at Hunter Wendelstedt, who is behind the plate. He said something else. Really, it was the fan. And Wendelstedt ejects Aaron Boone. The cameras caught it. Wendelstedt's response was, I don't care who said it, you're gone. When he said, I don't care who said it, his reference was somebody in the dugout. His assumption was somebody was in the dugout. So he claimed he heard something from the dugout and that it's Boone's responsibility, the dugout, not to, you know, be questioning the umpire. He had a chance to kind of walk it back and admit a Jim Joyce moment. Remember when Jim Joyce ruined the perfect game for Armando Galarraga at Comerica Park? I'm sure you do. He was tearful following the game. He was beside himself. In case you didn't remember, I mean, Jim Joyce was against Cleveland. Armando Galarraga's got a perfect game. Ground ball out to finish. Jim Joyce is the first base umpire. You would think runner was out by a step and a half. He called him safe, ruined it. Cabrera couldn't believe it at first. Galarraga couldn't believe it as the pitcher. Nobody could believe it. It was highway robbery. Next day, I mean, Joyce admitted his fault. He was tearful in bringing the lineup card to home plate. Tigers gave Galarraga a Corvette. Pretty damn nice. And Jim Joyce owned it. Hunter Wendelstedt, and this is another example. This is what I tell my kids all the time. It's really hard to say a couple of phrases. I was wrong or I don't know. Hunter Wendelstedt wouldn't say I was wrong. Here's his quote. Apparently, what he said was there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said. Well, that's not true because now you have. He said, I understand that's going to be part of the story or something like that because that's what Aaron was portraying. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout, had nothing to do with his area, but he's the manager of the Yankees, so he's the one that had to go. Now, Hunter Wendelstedt has seen more baseball in his career than I probably ever will. Doesn't mean he's always right, but I do wonder, and umpires are trained on this stuff, how do you differentiate how far away a voice is coming in a stadium, outdoors, with so many things going on? Am I questioning his judgment? Absolutely. Yes, I am. I don't get it. He's at home plate. The nearest voice to him is Aaron Boone and the fan behind Aaron Boone. The furthest voice in his reference, you know, obviously the furthest voiced is right field, but you're not going to hear that. The furthest voice for him in his reference point is the far end of the dugout. How does he differentiate the fan who had to have heard? If he could hear Aaron Boone earlier in the inning, he had to have heard the fan because he's right behind him. He's got prime seats. Those are premier seats there at Yankee Stadium. How does he differentiate that from somebody he thinks he has heard at the end of the dugout? And if you ever watch the replay, and I'm sure you will, you could see Brad Ausmus, who's part of Aaron Boone's staff, wait for the giggle from Tigers fans everywhere. He pointed right to the fan. 866-838-4843. We got a text, don't we?
That's Ben. Right.
Yeah.
It says, is it Scott Harris's MO to sign veteran starters, try to straighten them up, and then trade them? Lawrenson was a guy who hit his stride last year. Was that a popular move in-house when he was traded last year?
Mike, he's talking about Michael Lorenzen. I think it depends on where his team is at. I don't think his MO is, I'm going to get a couple of veteran starters, trade them, and then regroup. I think he wants to sprinkle in a veteran starter. Well, look, remember when the Tigers had Kenny Rogers? I think that's a fair comparison. You bring in an established guy, although Rogers was probably a little bit more established than Michael Lorenzen. But, I mean, Jack Flaherty, Kenta Maeda, they're well established as major league starters. I think it's difficult for any staff, save the Braves back in the 90s with Smoltz and Glavin and Maddox, right? But even they had, you know, Charlie Liebrandt and some veteran starters. So I think it's hard to go an entire season and then what you hope would be a postseason with all young starters. At what point do we stop saying a guy is young? I don't look at age as much as I look at experience. So I still think the Tigers staff with Skubal and Mize, eventually Manning, for sure, Reese Olson, I still think they're relatively young. I think it's good to have some of that veteran presence in there. Look, how many times did we say this about the Pistons this year? They were the second youngest team in the NBA. And we kept talking about their youth and how they needed a veteran who they can kind of lean on. I think pitching is very similar to that. If you don't have a veteran catcher, and I suppose Carson Kelly is, eventually people are going to start looking at Jake Rogers like that. He's been around long enough. I don't think he's young anymore. But I do believe that's kind of the method of operandi by Scott Harris. If that's all he ever wanted to do, then he would have traded Eduardo Rodriguez. And I know he tried to. And he didn't play that hand well at all, did he? No, he did not. That blew up in his face. Now, it turns out to be a pretty good opt-out for the Tigers. They were paying Eduardo Rodriguez, I believe, about $14 million. And Eduardo Rodriguez decides to use his player option and goes to Arizona, where he's going to make $17 million and then some by signing, I think it was a five-year contract with the Diamondbacks. Folks, he's not even pitching. He hasn't even appeared in a game for Arizona. He's on a 60-day IL with a left shoulder strain. That's a good move for Detroit. But I don't believe I'm going to collect some veteran arms, and I'm just going to trade them away. If they're out of the playoffs, if they don't have a shot, then it makes a ton of sense to trade them away, don't you think? And it's not just pitchers either. You could be trading away if the Tigers are not in a playoff spot and somebody knocks on your door for Mark Canna because he's on a one-year deal worth $11 million, would you trade him? Sure you would. Sure. Because I don't know can't say that he'd be quote-unquote part of the future. He's not the core. How's that? So you'd do the same thing with pitching. I would hope. Let the veterans help the young guys. Let the veterans get you to what you hope will be the postseason or later in the summer. And if it doesn't happen, if you're not as successful as you want to be, then you see what interested teams are out there, because most teams absolutely need a veteran arm in the playoffs. That's been pretty evident everywhere you go. Pitching is at a premium, especially then. And you've got two guys, if they have decent years. I say decent. It can't be great, because if they're having great years, then your team's probably having a pretty good season itself. But if somebody needs a Kenta Maeda, if somebody needs a Jack Flaherty, somebody needs a bat off the bench like a Canna or an Urshela, sure, you should be open to it. In addition to that, if you wanted to make a huge splash, what you could do is you could package one of those guys with another young guy and try to get a big bat in the middle of your order. There's a lot of different ways you can, you know, kind of maneuver it. Worst case scenario for Kenta Maeda, let's say he continues to blow up. You cut him and you bring up Matt Manning. Or you release Kenta Maeda, he goes through waivers and you re-sign him and try to get him right in the minors. Something like that. But I don't think he just acquires him just for that reason alone. I think it's a possibility, and it's something you have to consider, knowing that you're not tied to him long term. It's a good question, though. Enjoy the conversation. 866-838-4843. That's the Meyer hotline for you to discuss anything that might be on your mind in the world of sports on this Tuesday morning on X's and Bros across the great state of Michigan. Stay with us.
We're teeing off our 10th year. At the Meyer LPGA Classic for Simply Give. Get ready for the best tour yet to help neighbors in need while enjoying golf, food, and family fun. Join us June 13th through the 16th at Blythefield Country Club for fabulous food, Discoveryland for kids, and of course, elite women golfers from around the world competing to help feed our neighbors. Get your tickets now at MeyerLPGAClassic.com.
Huge here for my good friend Drew and the crew at Impact Power Sports. Now, they're located on 14 Mile Road in Rockford, just north of Grand Rapids here on the west side of the state. They are Michigan's newest Yamaha go-to golf cart dealer. Now, if you're looking for a golf cart for the neighborhood, the business, the golf club, maybe that second home or the lake, stop by and see Drew and the crew. They can hook you up today at Impact Power Sports. They also have e-bikes, quads, side-by-side, yard toys for the big boys and the big girls. Anything you need when it comes to power, they have it at Impact Power Sports on 14 Mile Road in Rockford. Also, if you want a shot at winning Lomas Brown's Lions golf cart, a custom-built Lions golf cart, text IMPACT to 21000. That's IMPACT to 21000. And you could win Lomas Brown's Lions golf cart this summer from Impact Power Sports and The Huge Show.
June 23rd, the world's most notorious rock band is coming to Soaring Eagle Casino. Motley Crue. The Crue. The Soaring Eagle Summer Outdoor Concert Series. Tickets start at $54 and are on sale now at the box office and online at etix.com. Party on, then take a ride on the wild side. Motley Crue, Sunday, June 23rd at Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort.